although there is a bit of a feeling that, you know, these negotiations are rather slow, there is a very concrete set of initiatives that is being undertaken nevertheless. So in climate change adaptation, I think we see a lot of progress, but it is not necessarily always visible, and reports like this help to show that a lot is going on and that big, large-scale adaptation programs are underway.
What you have done in the way you're approaching the smallholder farmer is it's a bit of a quantum shift, isn't it, in attitude from considering them as victims of climate change to considering them as an active part of the equation. Could that same quantum change in thinking be applied on a broader scale to the way we deal with climate change?
Well, I think the debate about climate change has very often been a bit, I would say, stranded almost in, you know, dividing the world in the perpetrators and the victims of global warming. And when we look at the history of these climate change negotiations, we have not necessarily seen this rhetoric being very effective and creating the sense of urgency and the operational scale mechanisms that are so desperately needed to address this urgent problem. So I think shifting from a way where we keep discussing whose fault it is and how big the problem is into now concrete solutions is a very important paradigm shift. I think we need to do that because we're all in this together. Climate change does not have national boundaries, and we need to find those groups, those institutions that can help us solve the problem. For us in IFAD, smallholder farmers are small enterprises. So they are not people who live in poor developing countries and require charity or require handouts because they cannot feed themselves or help themselves. For us, they are small enterprises and they have a lot of innovation potential. So what we need to do is to empower them with access to information, with access to technology, access to finance. And then I think we will see that smallholder farmers can help us feed a growing population, build resilience and reduce agriculture's carbon footprint. I think in developing countries, the innovation potential is not any smaller than you would have it in developed economies. And I think there is also a particular strength in smallholder farming in these countries, because if you manage to organize smallholder farmers in small cooperatives, in water user groups, if you help to build women's savings groups, then that these small organizations, they can really be very powerful agents of change. But this is a slightly different model to what you see in you know, big industrial agriculture. But when you manage to provide these small groups with certain innovations, such as, for example, biogas digesters or drip irrigation kits.
And also, given the nature of the sort of investment they need, we are getting more bang for our buck in terms of the investment, aren't we?
Yes. I mean, in conferences like in Lima, there are big discussions about climate finance. Climate finance being an additional source of financing that developed economies, especially OECD countries, are providing to developing economies. In the international climate change negotiations, when you look, when you compare different sectors, I would say agriculture is the field that has the biggest potential for what we call multiple benefits. So when you invest climate finance well in the agriculture sector, you can, on the one side, increase agricultural productivity, but also on a second count, increase resilience and reduce the risks from climate change, and on a third count, reduce carbon footprint and contribute to climate change mitigation. So it's a very, I would say, a very rich field that provides a lot of opportunities for multiple benefits.